We now begin Maseches Trumos. I did record an extensive introduction, and I suggest you listen to that first, as well as look at the handout if you're unfamiliar with the tithing procedure. But now we begin Perek Aleph, Mishnah 1-1. The Mishnah will tell us of five categories of people who may not take Truma, and even if they do, their act of taking Truma is ineffective, meaning that that which they set aside for the Kohen remains chul and remains totally unsanctified and totally ineffective. Now, the basis for these five are basically coming from the comparison between Truma, the gift that's from produce given to the Kohanim, and Truma, the donations that were given from the Jews in the Midbar, in the desert, towards the building of the Mishkan in the desert. So, in Parshas Truma, the Sidra, the section of the Torah discussing with mentioning Truma, referring to Trumot gifts, elevated gifts that are given to the Mishkan for the Mishkan's construction, the pasuk says, "Daber b'nei Yisrael v'yikchu li Truma." Speak to the Jews, Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, and take from me Truma. And the pasuk goes on to say, "Me'es kol ish," from every man, "Asher yidvenu libo," who is moved to be generous by his heart, "Tikhu es trumasi," they should take my truma, my donation, "Vazosa truma asher tikhu me'itam," and this is the gift, the donation that you shall take from them. And then it begins to list, "Zahav v'chesev v'nechoshes," etc. The pasuk talks about gold, silver, copper, and so on. So from that pasuk, we're going to have several drashas that say that just as over there in the Mishkan construction in the desert, there were certain limits on who could do the donating, so too when it comes to the separations of Truma as the gift to the Kohen, there are certain limitations. And here they are. The first, the Mishnah says inside, "Chamisha," there are five categories of persons, "Lo Yisramu," that shouldn't take Truma, "Ve'im Tarmu," and if they do separate a portion of Truma, "Ein Trumasan Truma," that which they set aside doesn't have the status of Truma at all, then the food that they tithe still is chul, and nothing happened. The first is Hacheresh. The Cheresh here is the deaf mute. This is a person who's considered to not have Das. He is excluded because of the Pasuk. The verse says, Yidvenu Libo, a person who's moved to be generous from his heart. Now the truth is when the Torah says Lev or Libo, it almost always refers to a person's, what we would call in English, his mind. Not the rational part of his mind, which is called seichel, but the part of one's mind which is moved by emotions or intuition, that's called one's lev. And a person who is a cheresh is not believed to have, be sound of mind, to have the faculty of das, to understand. I will translate das as understanding the consequences of his actions. So since he's not mentally developed enough to have a mind of his own, if you will, as a deaf mute, he is unable to give truma. Just to paint the picture, in case you're unfamiliar, we're talking here about someone who was born deaf, and therefore he'd never learned to speak because no information could kind of get into his head from his ears. And certainly, in ancient times, it was just assumed that such a person was essentially mentally incompetent entirely. It didn't. Nowadays, they've done wonders with teaching people to sign and so on and so forth, and the questions of whether a person who learns to speak despite the fact that he's deaf now, if that changes things or not, but that's beyond the scope of our mission here. Our mission assumes as a given that a person who's a deaf mute can neither hear nor speak, has no das, is excluded by the pasuk because it says yidvenu libo, and he doesn't qualify as having sufficient intellect to have be moved by his heart as such. So therefore the cheresh can't give truma, and if he does, it's totally ineffective. Second of all, v'hashota. A shota is a mentally incompetent person, also similarly can't be moved by his heart, meaning he doesn't have a sound mind to be able to give truma. Oftentimes people misunderstand a shota to being someone who's an idiot, an imbecile, someone who's mentally incompetent, meaning he's just not intelligent enough. That's not really the definition of a shota. The way that the Chazal describe a shota is either one of two ways. Either that they don't know how to protect their person, so they'll do things like walk around in dangerous places by themselves at night or sleep in graveyards and so, not realizing that's dangerous and endangering themselves, or when you give them things or their own possessions, they'll destroy those things without, you know, heeding the fact that why would you destroy that which belongs to you, your own property? That's just you're messing yourself up. So, again, the shota, someone who really has got a disconnect from reality, not understanding the consequence of their actions, and since they're mentally incompetent, they are unable to fulfill this pasuk of being moved by their hearts, by their minds, to be generous and give. I always tell a joke to explain shota, which I'll say here very briefly, to illustrate the point. I think it's important, so people shouldn't misunderstand. The story goes of a fellow who got a flat tire in front of an insane asylum, and he replaces his tire, but as he's attempting to put the nuts back to affix the tire back to the car, the nuts fall down the drain. So he's stuck without a way to affix his tire to his car, and sure enough, a fellow screams from out the window from the insane asylum, "Hey, why don't you just take one nut from each of the other three tires, and you'll have three nuts, and you can then use that to attach your fourth tire, and you'll have three nuts holding each of the tires on. You can drive to a fix the station, and there you can get the missing lug nuts and fix up your tires, and everything's gonna be fine." So the fellow's amazed. I mean, he couldn't figure that out for himself, but the guy in the insane asylum could. So he kind of yells back at him and says, "Hey, if you're so smart, what are you doing inside there?" So the fellow in the insane asylum says, "Listen, I may be crazy, but I'm not stupid." So we have to differentiate between being disconnected from reality, crazy, and just being stupid, being unintelligent. So a person who's just simply unintelligent, or not, that's not the relevant point here. Here we're talking about someone who has a disconnect from reality in terms of consequences of his actions, and as such, he is a shota, and he can't give truma. The third is the katan. Now, the katan means a child, and usually in the triumvirate of people who haven't got das, you have the cheresh, shota, and katan going together, and therefore you might think that the three of them are excluded from giving truma from the same part of the verse, talking about needing to have a lev, a sound mind, and to be moved to give. But that's not the case, according to the Bartender anyways. And the reason why is because a child who's in his year prior to his bar mitzvah, talk about a boy for a second, so it is possible for him to have enough mental capacity to have reached what's called onas nadarim, to be able to effect different oaths and restrictions upon himself. And that's only possible if he has sufficient mental, attained mental sophistication enough to have some level of das. And that being the case, it would not be sufficient to rely on the Yidven Alibo pasuk. So therefore, the exclusion of the child of the katan is from a different part of the pasuk, the part that says that the truma should be taken me'eis kol ish, from every man, man to exclude child. So not excluding women, but excluding man. That is to say that when it comes to people, again, we'll talk about men, but it's really the same for women. There are two categories. Adults are called ish, and minors are called atinok. Atinok means not, in modern Hebrew, atinok means a baby. But in the context of the Mishnayos and Chazal, atinok would mean even like 11, 12 years old, still atinok. So this person hasn't reached maturity yet to be an adult. So to be an adult, for a man anyways, for a male, he needs to have two conditions. He needs to be 13 years old, as we call it in English, as well as to have brought two pubic hairs forth. So those are called simanim. He has to have physical signs of maturity, puberty, as well as the chronological age of 13 years old. If he has the physical signs prior to reaching 13, irrelevant. If he has reached 13, there are some questions about if we are concerned that he brought forth the physical signs, but they fell out. And indeed, that's what we assume to be the case, halach lamaisa. But for now, let's just keep it simple. We're talking about someone who's 13 and indeed has the physical signs of maturity of the two heirs. When it comes to women, so the age is not 13, but 12. And then again, the same signs. She needs to have also brought forth two heirs. There are other potential signs of physical maturity. But in terms of developments of a woman, but the usual definition is just the two heirs. Now, just to clarify a single point, in case you're not clear, the halacha will always refer to it as being 13 years old in a day. And that's only because on a person's, what we call their birthday, let's say, for example, a person is born on the 10th of Shvat. So on the 9th of Shvat, he has now fulfilled a full year of life. And so the 10th of Shvat begins the next year. So he's like now a full year and a day older. So if a person on his birthday is a 10th of Shvat, really he's now on his 13th. He's 13 full years yesterday, and now he's beginning the first day of the 14th year. So that's why we say the 13 years old in a day, but what we would call the birthday is the birthday. Okay, so a person who's reached adulthood, meaning 13 for a boy and 12 for a girl, as well as brought forth the two hairs, they are able to give truma, and less than that, they cannot give. Those are the first three. Then we have v'hatorim es she'eino shelo. If a person takes truma from produce which doesn't belong to him, that will be ineffective. You can't do it. You can't take truma for somebody else, in as much as the pasuk says that it has to be taken from them, me'itam, from you, and therefore it's your own as opposed to someone else's. Yeah, an important caveat here. There's no problem with a person empowering another Jew to be his shaliach, his agent. In that capacity as an agent, he's really an extension. The agent is an extension of the person who empowered him. And there's no problem at all with me authorizing you to take truma on my behalf. That's no problem. What we're talking about here in the Mishnah here is where I unilaterally go and take truma on your, you know, take truma, a gift from your produce for you without authorization. That is totally ineffective because of this verse, and that's the case here. And finally, the fifth is a nachri shatarm eshel Yisrael, a filo birshus. When it comes to a non-Jew cannot take truma on behalf of a Jew, even if the Jew would have explicitly authorized the non-Jew to do so. The non-Jew simply is just unable to. The reason for that is a drasha, actually based on a different pasuk, not one we saw, but a pasuk that's referring to the halachas of Trumas Meiser. And there it's an extra word, gam, also. The pasuk is gam atem, also you. So that extra, also gam, is telling that only a Jew can act, even as an agent, to take truma from another Jew, and not a non-Jew. So that's the case here, that it says, Nachri Shatarim is Shel Yisrael. If a non-Jew takes on behalf of a Jew, a filu b'rishus, even with authorization, ain trumas or truma, still that taking of truma is ineffective altogether.